tonight with us for Louis T. right out of Visalia.
Oh, I thought I was just supposed to come. I didn't know I was talking. Good evening, everybody. My name is Louis Thompson. I am a recovered alcoholic. As Jim said, my sobriety date is December 8th, 2015. So I have 5 years and one day sober, all in a row, no days off, nothing like that. My home group is the Monday Night Men's Stag Meeting in Visalia. I actually live in Porterville, but I mostly go to meetings in Visalia just because I work over in that area, and yeah, it's just convenient. So I guess since he broached the subject of the joke, I can let you guys in on that little secret. It's a little joke that I think describes my life as an alcoholic pretty well. So there's this meeting full of drunks, and this guy runs in the back door, you know, lab coat, he's a scientist, and he says, I've done it. I've solved the riddle. If you take this one pill first thing in the morning, you can drink, have no consequences at all. And the hand goes up on the back and he says, what happens if I take two? No, that's me. Now, what happens if I take two or three or four or whatever? So, let's start at the very beginning. The number one thing. I just said something, you know, made a statement when I started, and it's a pretty big statement. Said, my name is Louis Thompson. I'm a recovered alcoholic. You know, so what does that even mean? So I'm an alcoholic. I belong to a distinct entity of people, which I would hazard to say, if you're sitting here listening to me, you may or may not also belong to that group of people in this world. It's not my place to say, but. So, as an alcoholic, you know, there's something different about me. You know, my brain is abnormal, as I like to say. And I have what I believe, as is described in the doctor's opinion of our book, an allergy to alcohol. And, you know, I can't believe anything else that changes the way I feel. And if you think about it as an allergy, and you think about, you know, what an allergy is, say, for example, this is a pretty common one you'll hear a lot, but someone has a peanut allergy. Say, okay, I'm going on a date with someone for the first time, and we're going out, and we go out to Chinese food, and we're sitting there having a good time, we're eating, and she's like, oh, man, what is this? It's delicious. Oh, yeah, that's Kung Pao, you know, and so, oh, doesn't Kung Pao have peanuts in it? Yeah, you know, and she's like, oh. Well, I'm allergic to peanuts. Oh, shit. You know? Well, someone with a peanut allergy, when they consume peanuts, when they take it into their body, you know, there's some manifestations or symptoms of that allergy that come. Depending on the severity of the allergy, you know, they can get itchy, get some hives, you know, go to anaphylaxis and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's really bad. And so, you know, with that in mind, with my allergy to alcohol, when I take alcohol into my body, I've got some symptoms that manifest as a result. And the first one is called the phenomenon of craving. It's a physical manifestation of that allergy, and just, I gotta have some more. You know, physically, it's just there, you know. That's not enough. I gotta take some more. You know, and then with that physical allergy, there's also that physical reaction to the allergy, there's also a mental reaction as well that happens, and that's the mental obsession. And it's just right there, you know. No matter what I'm doing, I mean, it's not a stretch for me to say that, you know, it's definitely an obsession for me. Because when I'm going, that's it. That's what I'm doing. 24/7. But even if for some small reason I was just trying to, like, you know, keep it cool or something, it's always right there. You know, no matter what you do, that obsession is there. And so once I get that phenomenon of craving, that mental obsession take hold, you know, I've got a spiritual malady, I've got an illness of the spirit, and I get into this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, and just everything is just so fucking bad, you know. Just, you know, I love when Bill's story, you know, I always when I'm working with guys and we get into a Bill's story, I always leave him hanging right here. So we'll talk, and then on page 8 right there, he's just done, you know, and it says, no words can tell the loneliness in the spirit I found in that bitter morass of self-pity. Quick staring, stretching around me in all directions, I had met my match, I had been overwhelmed. Alcohol was my master. You know, and it's just the imagery that comes with that is just awesome. I like it. You know, morass is like a swamp if you think of that, you know. And so he's in this bitter morass of self-pity and despair, you know, and the quicksand is just all around him. And everything is just so bad. Those terrible, just, oh, I'm such a bad, oh my God. I have no choice at that point but to get loaded. There's nothing I can do. You know, that's an alcoholic. You know. So today, as a recovered alcoholic, as one of the very first promises in the book tells us, is that I recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And that's just what it is, seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. It's not the end of the world. You know, it seems like it because of this disease that I have, you know. And it's just, when I'm there, there's nothing, no matter what, I can do but get loaded. You know, and that's why I'm an alcoholic. You know. Man. I know it's a great age, Ren. I remember I did this meeting like 4 years ago or something. I had like 9 months sober in the ice house, and it was terrible, I think. It was really bad. I listened to it afterwards. You know, and I had this outline because, you know, I'm a pretty good scholar. I have an education, which is weird. My whole background is just really damn weird. It's like two opposite, completely opposite sides of the coin. But I did get educated, so I went about, you know, this as like, I'm going to, you know, teach some kind of class and have this outline of all these points that I want to touch upon and all this stuff. And it was just unnatural, robotic and stuff. And so, well, today I kind of trust God with everything I do. And so, you know, now I just kind of let God determine what I'm going to talk about. So, when I talked about what an alcoholic is, I believe that I was an alcoholic from the very start. I don't think that, you know, I do believe that some people may not be alcoholic when they're born, and, you know, like once they're pickled, you know, they're going to turn a pickle back into a cucumber kind of deal. You know, there's something that alcohol abuse does to the brain chemistry that, you know, just creates that alcoholism. But I kind of think that I was just like this from the start. And I've always been off. Even as a little kid, as a mental little bastard, always had to get everything that I wanted, no matter what. And I had a lot of alcoholic behaviors before I ever was introduced to alcohol or anything else. And one great example of this. So, I don't recall when it was. It was quite some time ago, maybe 10, 15 years ago. But in the store, if you located this little Fisher-Price tape recorder from the 80s, and it's this little, you know, square tape recorder, it's got a handle on it, it's got the little microphone with the curly Q thing attached to it, and I played it, and the whole thing was just me as like a 4 or 5 year old kid. I was hiding somewhere, and I was had this Fisher-Price thing, and I was talking into it, saying dirty words. I was like, oh, poopoo pee pee shit. just having the time of my life, laughing, getting away with saying all the stuff that I knew I wasn't supposed to say, you know. And I knew that if I got caught doing it, I was going to get in trouble. But I got this thrill, I got this, you know, endorphin release, this adrenaline rush from getting away with it, you know, at that young age, you know. And it's just like, you know, so that leads me to believe that, you know, there's already something kind of off, you know. And I used to do just, you know, weasel my way, and, you know, from a young age, I was always, you know, a natural manipulator. And I studied it, I perfected my skills, and, you know, I tried different things that at first it was kind of like, you know, a second nature subconscious thing, but then I figured out if I did different things, I could get people to do what I wanted, you know. And so as I got older, I kind of practiced it and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, you know, classic alcoholic. And I was always getting into trouble. I was always had something cooking. You know, I felt like I wasn't as good as everybody else. And this is a common thing. You know, I know you guys have heard this a lot. I wasn't as good as everybody else. And everybody knew that I was just fake and I was just this and that. And so I had to do something to mask that. When I was young, I was born down in LA, and I think we lived there till, I remember being in kindergarten there, and then we moved up here. And you know, progressing through school, I did pretty well, when I like actually, you know, wanted to. Other than that, well, I got myself into trouble. The classwork and stuff as a youth was pretty easy. You know, I'd get an assignment and they'd be like, okay, everybody sit down and do your times tables, you know, kind of thing. And I'd be done in like a minute. And I'd just bring them back making fart noises and stuff. And just like, no, just get the fuck out of here, basically. You know, and I lived in the office and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I was just always just eminence king. You know, and I got to, you know, I lost my mother at a young age. And then, you know, I recall the first time I felt the effects of alcohol. I was pretty young, you know, probably like 7. It was at a family. This is my cousin Jim, his wedding. And everybody, they had like kegs and stuff. And I was there, like, you know, man in the keg. People come through the line and I was giving them a little shout. And they're like, oh man, what does this stuff taste like, you know? And they're like, oh yeah, take a sip. You know, and so I did that on and on and on, you know, and got a couple double dips. He's like, didn't you already try it? You know, kind of deal. And I felt funny. I got feeling weird and nice and warm and just everything was good. And I didn't have any other things that, you know, alcohol does for us. And I remembered that, you know. So after my mom had passed away, I'd get into my dad's, you know, liquor and all that kind of stuff. I just started escaping those feelings that I was having. And then, just throughout the rest of my life, really, I was just ended up being a low life, clear criminal, gang banging, real, just bad person. I went to prison a couple times. I was always just involved in, I like alcohol. I like drugs. I didn't have any kind of job skills. So, if you like alcohol, you like drugs, why not have them all the time and provide them to other people? You know, and then, boom. Number one, you get money. Number two, you get all the drugs and alcohol you want. And number three, you can manipulate the shit out of everybody because everybody wants what you got and you can just control people. You know, so it was a great, great thing for me. You know, and you know, I was a real terrible person. I did a lot of bad shit. Like I said, I went to prison a couple times. And there came a time where I was getting out of prison. on my pills. Actually, I'm on my second term. And I got out of Corcoran, and I was just like, man, I gotta fucking do something else. You know? So this whole first half of my life, I was just like the worst. Like, if you point to anything that's wrong with society, that's me. You know? I got to this point where I was like, okay, I'm going to go to school, I'm going to get educated, I'm going to do all this stuff, blah, 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 blah. And I did. But I was even worse of a person than ever. I got so, like, well, I mean, I went to school, I'm capable of doing, you know, education stuff pretty well, and I got through, I graduated from Cal State Bakersfield with an MBA, and like in unheard of, I did it in 4 years flat, which should have been like six, and I was involved with all this stuff in the community, and I was like completely 100% morally bankrupt. I had this persona built up, you know, I used to be such a lowlife, you know, and I changed it all around, and now I'm here helping the community, and everybody loved me and worshiped me, you know. Everybody's like, well, you know, someone gets a doctorate, you know, you call them doctor, I got my master's, you guys should start calling me Master Thompson, you know. Why not? It makes sense, perfect sense, you know. And I was, oh my God, I was just so terribly, you know. I got a super great job. I was doing, you know, I was in the ag industry. I was working with this, not only was it just this marketing pool for a fairly large commodity in this area, so there's a ton of money involved, but there's also, you know, an industry interest group, which is, you know, a nice way of saying there's a lot of lobbying going on within the organization. So we've got to work with like Kevin McCarthy and all these guys. So I'm just, you know, classic alcoholic, you know, just wanted everybody to know how much, and it comes down to this, you know, I didn't feel like I belonged there. I knew I was fucking fooling everybody. I knew I was a piece of shit. And I had to make everyone feel like I was so much better than them, so much more superior than them, so that I could feel, you know, dysfunction. You know, and I was just getting drunk, getting loaded, everything. And when I was going to school, I was able to kind of keep it cool for a little bit, just because I was so busy and with doing all that stuff that I didn't have a chance to do anything, really. But once that stopped, you know, that was it. You know, I was on this board here, and I was doing this, and I was flying to conferences all the time, all over the place. You know, it's just an excuse to get drunk, get loaded every single day. And then, you know, what happens? We're like that. You know, I was completely unreliable. I get fired, so I got to go back to what I know, because I'm used to now having a bunch of money and all that stuff. And within, I'm a pretty big guy. There's no secret there. Within like 6 months, I lost like 100 pounds. No bullshit. And I was on it. I was back in the streets. I was doing what I do, you know. My natural, just straight, pure, natural thing is natural. I have no power. I am a very just really bad thing, you know. And, you know, then that's what'll happen. I got busted, all that kind of stuff, all that, you know, everything like that. And my whole life, I've been, maybe since I was a little kid, you know, I had to go to, like, group homes and all this kind of stuff. And they always carted us around, but I never tried anything. And so, you know, I actually had money and stuff at that time, this last time around, and I had, you know, been as outwardly successful, you know, falsely successful. I had a house and ranch and all money and stuff like that, you know, but I was completely, utterly, morally bankrupt and just a real piece of shit. So I got an attorney and I jacked and jabbed and did all that kind of stuff that, you know, I do. And I ended up getting nothing, some stupid slap on the wrist kind of deal. And they put me in a program. Program that I had went, same one I went to when I was like 18 years old and I first got busted. And then, you know, I fell out and had the attorney. And they said, go to this program. You know? And so I was just, you know, repeating the cycle. And I recall I was at a Friday night meeting at the Lano Club. And there was a pine guy. And I'm sitting there and doing what we do on a Friday night. New Visions goes over there. I was just out. I was looking good. I was just doing the same old stuff. And this guy gets up at the podium and he talks about, he has this book here and he talks about relapse. You know, I've never seen anybody relapse in the program or Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, everybody's like, oh, this guy's bullshit. But, you know, something, my spidey senses are tingling, you know. It's like, something piqued my interest in what he's saying, you know, and he elaborated about that, on that, you know, and he said, well, I've never seen anybody, you know, come into this program, you know, get this book, get a sponsor, do the work, give themselves to God, 100% do what is suggested. I've never seen anybody do that in a relapse. You know, and it's like, huh. You know? I don't know why, but that made perfect sense to me, you know. Okay, so I went up to the guy after the meeting, and nice word there. So, strangely enough, like, I think the day before, there's a guy who's a staple down there at the Lano Club, and I asked him to be my sponsor, and he's like, oh, well, I don't sponsor guys who pine. Okay, cool. And so I asked this guy, will you be my sponsor? And he said, well, yeah, but you gotta be willing to do the work. You know, which is, now is my response whenever someone asks, okay, you want a sponsor? Yep. But you gotta be willing to do the work, you know? And so I did, you know? For the first time in my life, well, from a young age, you know, I was beaten until this, I could say. So my dad, one of his tents, he had some real gems, one of them, it's better to be a smart ass than to be a dumbass. But the really good one is, you know, he used to tell me, oh, if you're going to half-ass it, don't do it at all, you know. And so one time I said, okay, I'm just going to half-ass it, so I'm not going to do it. And it didn't work out in my favor. But, you know, my whole life, I did everything to last. Like, but, I mean, the problem is that everything that I did was all negative. It was all criminal activity. It was manipulation. Everything I did it. Boom, balls to the wall, just straight up going, we're gone, you know. And so, like, I just said, okay, you know. For the first time in my life, I actually, like, full-assed something for me that was good. You know, I just jumped into this program, you know, with everything I had, you know, from... You know, I got this assignment when I was working on step one. I got this assignment where I had to write a page about powerlessness, you know. And one of the things that I still catch myself doing it to this day. It's just a natural thing, but I put the brakes on when I catch myself doing it. Is, you know, I always growing up my whole life, I've always, like, mentally intuited, like, situations and, like, random fantasize. I don't know, fantasize about them and, like, you know, what's going to work, what outcomes are going to happen and stuff like that. And so, I know some of you have heard this before, but, you know, like, the movie The Christmas Story? When you shoot your eye out, kid. So, one of their assignments is they want him to write this theme about what they want for Christmas. And he's writing this theme about Red Ryder, you know, model Ranger rifle, compass in stock, you know, and he writes this thing out, and he's thinking, fantasizing about when he turns it into his teacher, you know, and she's just like, oh my God, this is so amazing, you know, and she's like, A plus, and she's like going off, just plussing off the chalkboard, across the wall and everything, you know, I'm like giving my sponsor this paper, and don't you know? You know, I'm educated. I got an MBA with a cumulative 3.96. Oh, this is bullshit. You know, I know how to write a fucking paper. And I just write this paper I killed it. And I handed it to him, and he's like, what is this garbage, you know? And I'm just like, what? What are you talking about, you know? And he says, you know, this is not about powerlessness. We wrote all about how you're powerful over alcohol, you know? It was like, I this, I that, I this. It was like 50 I statements in one page, which I don't even, you gotta like work to do that. You know, I allowed alcohol to do this, I allowed, you know, just, so I learned what powerlessness is, you know, when everything, you know, it was bad this last time around. It was really, really fucking bad. Sorry if I'm cussing too much for you guys. It just kind of pours out. But I just disappear. You know, I was just doing so well outwardly, you know, and I was just gone. You know, like, gone. Zero contact, like, have you seen my dad kind of deal. We've gone for a month, 6 weeks. And, we had, you know, a good loadie. Got the cameras, the surveillance cameras and all that kind of stuff going on at the ranch. And I could look on my phone and I could see my wife. You know, I haven't even been home for 5 weeks. You know, I could see my wife sit on the porch with a blanket, 3 o'clock in the morning, just praying that maybe this is going to be the night that I just kind of like, you know, try to sneak in and just come home. You know, I got loaded anyway. You know, I knew my kids were there, scared, where's my dad, worried about me. Well, I got loaded anyway. I couldn't help it, you know. I was powerless. You know, there was no question that my life was unmanageable. I couldn't even manage to stop those at the end. You know, that's bad. That's good shit, too. You know, I couldn't even do that successfully anymore. So, you know, yeah. It was no stretch. Powerlessness, yes. Unmanageability, yes. You know. And then, found what didn't work. I found what did work. You know, I let the prejudices go, and I embraced, you know, God of my understanding. He doesn't even make sense. You know, some of this stuff, you know, doesn't make sense, but it works, you know. My God doesn't keep score. You know, he doesn't. He doesn't track. He doesn't slap me on the hand. Say, bad boy, you know, you're going to hell. You look at movies. You go, no, that's the kind of God that I grew up with. You know, but my God doesn't keep score. And he forgives everything. But how, if he's not keeping score, how can he forgive? You know, it doesn't, but it works, you know. So the point of that is, you know, I found the characteristics of a God personal to me that could just make everything right. You know, as I said, you know, me in my natural state is bad. All bad. So I had to find a supernatural state, you know, a supernatural power to relieve, you know, that badness in me. You know, and I did that by finding a God personal to me, a God that makes perfect sense, you know. And then, you know, on step three, you know, so one cool thing, actually I got it right here. See, this little thing with this gem, it's probably backwards because it's on the thing, but the sponsor that I had, he did this really, really fucking cool thing. You know, and he did this little ceremony, and we listened to some songs, and he surprised me with this thing. This is contract between myself and my sponsor and God. Stop turning my will and my life over to him. You know, and it was awesome. And it's something that I continue to do with people that I sponsor today. And I've got guys that I sponsor are sponsoring people, and they're doing it. And so there's all these kind of little things floating around all over the place now. It's pretty awesome. But, you know, I turned my will and my life over to God as I understood him. You know, like Uncle Tubby or Jim was saying, and I love God doesn't make mistakes. You know, and it's absolutely true. It's just, and even talks about in the book, you know, logic was a great thing. We loved it, and we still do. You know, I love logic. And it's just so logical to me. God doesn't make mistakes. You know, and so it's like, whenever I'm talking to my guys or even anybody, I'm going to say, okay, follow me here. Does my God doesn't make mistakes. Does your God make mistakes? Oh, no. Oh, no. Okay. So God doesn't make mistakes, right? So that means that everything going on right now is exactly how God intended it to be, right? Okay. So we got those two things. God doesn't make mistakes. Everything is exactly how it's supposed to be. So have you done it? Have I done everything that I can in my power in any situation, this situation that's going on right now? Yep. Okay. God doesn't make mistakes. Everything is exactly how it's supposed to be. I've done everything I possibly could. Well, then that's how it is. You know, it is what it is. You know, it's up to God's will now. You know, I can only do what I can. You know, and that's just, man, that's really changed my life. I have the opportunity to work right now in kind of a higher level position. I deal with a lot of attorneys and just like big stuff, you know, like if I do bad, you know, it could cost our organization millions of dollars on some of the stuff that I do. And it's like, you guys trust me to do this? You know, what the hell? You know, kind of stuff. And I used to get these legal letters. I just used to, this pissed me off so bad. I'd have to do these subpoenas and answer them. And I'd fax it like 40 times in a row back to back so it'd tie up the fax machine and just screw you guys, you know, kind of deal. And I was just like, ugh, like, boom, ah. And then it was just like, boom, God doesn't make mistakes. I'm just, you know, I've lived that in my life. And it's just relieved so much, you know. I, you know, did a four-step to the best of my ability. I dug deep. I put everything. It was like 50 pages. At that point, I was all in. You know, I knew I had to do this stuff as best as I could. And if I did it, that I was going to get the rewards for it. And I did the fifth step, identified those, you know, shortcomings and character defects. I asked God to take those just like he took my alcoholism, you know, and he hasn't taken all of them, but, you know, I continue to give them to him. You know, I made these amends cards, and I still got some. I think I got some that I haven't been able to do yet. Right here in my book, I got some. Oh, my alarm's going off. So what do I got, like 5 minutes still? You know, when I did that, you know, and then I got to the good stuff, the 10, 11, 12, you know, and I take personal inventory all the time, you know. One of the things I was explained to me right here, and I love it, at the bottom of page 13, is what I believe are the spiritual principles of a design for living we hear about, you know. So my friend promised when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator. I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all of my problems. Belief in the power of God, plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility were the essential requirements to establish and maintain a new order of things were the essential requirements. So those four things, you know, if something's going on, I stop real quick, do the spot check inventory, and I say, okay, these four spiritual principles, you know, belief in the power of God. So am I trusting God? Okay, no, yeah, everything's good there. Willingness, honesty, humility, you know, always, invariably, it'll be one of those things. If something's bothering me, I look at it and say, oh, you know, maybe I wasn't being 100% honest. I wasn't being this honest, but maybe I wasn't being honest, or whatever it is, you know, and boom. Just like it takes care of it, you know, and I give it to God. And then, you know, on awakening, I get up and I go through my day and I just do all the stuff. You know, when I got in service from the very early thing, I started making coffee, setting up chairs, you know, and I started, the one thing that really has changed in my life, in my recovery, is working with others. There's kind of two parts to getting sober. There's the getting sober and there's the staying sober. Getting sober is, you know, you're getting sober, you're doing the work, you're working with your sponsor. But once you, you know, for long-term sobriety, you know, you gotta work with other people. Knowing that you're at the sober fest, and that guy comes in from LA, and he's just killing it, and you're like pumped up, and you're like, hey, the shit, kind of, you're like all fired up about it, you know. That's how I feel when I sit across the table from another alcoholic and you get that book and you read it and you see that spark in their eye and they're like, oh, you know, you got that, you know? God, it's just so awesome, you know? And it's, that's what this program's all about, you know? And if you're not experiencing that, then I would suggest, you know, just to get out of your comfort zone and take that leap and work with others. It's just going to change your life. I always like to kind of end with this. You know, at the beginning, I talked about being recovered. And this is the best description of what that means, in my opinion. It's right at the bottom of 84 after the promises and everything. It says, we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally. We will find this has happened automatically. We will see that a new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor afraid. This is our experience. This is how we react, so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. That's amazing. You know, my whole life, I couldn't imagine a day without getting loaded. I would go to any length to get loaded. And I'm going to be completely honest with you. You know, I had to get loaded. If I couldn't get drunk, couldn't get dope, I would be out there huffing gas fumes if I had to. You know, I don't care. I gotta get loaded. I don't care. You know? And to go from that to where I'm at today, covered, I don't even... It doesn't exist for me, that problem. You know? That's amazing. I can't believe it. I can't even imagine getting loaded today. You know, and it's possible, you know, for someone like me to do it, you know, anybody could do it. You know, it's an amazing program. If you want to get sober and not have to do this again, get the book, get a sponsor, do the work, and that's it, you know, and then help other people, you know, clean house, go to meetings, help others, you know, that's it. You know, it sounds so simple. But you just gotta be ready, and you know, I hope I lived up to you guys' expectations tonight. You know, I really, really appreciate the opportunity to be here, and I really appreciate, you know, all of you. You know, I have a new family today. My family don't give a shit about me. Well, not that. I don't blame them. I did it. You know, I did it. So I don't blame them, but I have a family here today. And I love you guys, and, you know, thank you for having me.
Thanks, Louie. Can we have a round of applause for our speaker?